This came out between Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger.
Right.
Oh, wow. That's the sandwich?
That's the sandwich.
Welcome to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name's Nolan.
And this is episode 206. And Nolan, Kenny.
What?
This week at BlizzCon,
yeah.
Blizzard revealed both a cinematic trailer and a gameplay trailer for an upcoming game that they're calling Diablo 4.
Kenny, you know this, right?
I don't know if we're ready to talk about it.
Okay. No, we are. I was almost brought to tears. It was so good.
The cinematic?
Yes, it was so good.
I was almost
good.
Brought to fears. It is... the scariest, most darkest video game content that I've ever seen. And I just finished 2016's Doom. And so I've seen some dark content, but like this is dark.
Well, they
dark.
Said that. They were like, look, we know that fans really appreciate how dark the first two games were. And so check it out. Diablo 3 was for kids.
They are going back to their darker roots. Kenny, have you seen anything about this? We're not just the ones that are telling you for the first time, correct?
I have. No, I've watched the cinematic trailer and got hyped over it. But more importantly, I've tried to be at least a little bit privy to conversation about design decisions. And it feels like they're trying to go back to their roots to not do some of the mistakes, I'll say mistakes, that they made in Diablo 3 design. Yeah, absolutely. That characters are going to be more customizable, that itemization is going to make more sense, that
PvP.
People aren't going to be as pigeonholed into things. Obviously, this game is a long way out. It's super early.
Yeah.
Obviously, part of the hype is, hey, let's swing the pendulum from Immortals and from all the political talk about BlizzCon and like drop something that's big in hype. And so there's some like strategy there. But I'm a big ARPG fan, and I'm excited, and it makes me want to go play Path of Exile in the meantime.
Well, at launch, 5 classes will be available. An open world map with 5 regions is what it's going is the setting. It is going to maintain day and night cycles, a non-linear campaign, and of course, it will be released for Xbox One, PS4, and PC. Although all of this probably is subject to change because they didn't give a release date. They said it's nowhere near completion, so it's probably late 2020 probably the idea.
I like the transparency on that.
Shouldn't it also come out on Switch? Wouldn't that be amazing to play?
They will port it to Switch after it comes out, I'm pretty sure. Like, it's Diablo 3 is on Switch now, and I think they'll wait like a while after launch and be like, coming to Switch.
Yeah. Well, both the gameplay and the cinematic look really, really, really interesting. And
I'm excited. I think it would be a great game to play together. I might use it as an excuse to upgrade my system a little bit.
Dude, me too.
I'll play it with y'all. I will. And if y'all go slow and if we can enjoy the story.
Yeah, we'll go slow because it'll be our first playthrough.
You guys heard it here. He said it.
You heard it here first.
Now I'm actually hyped for this game. Like, now I'm about to lose my mind freaking out.
Okay, so that is the most recent news. That's super exciting. Diablo 4 news. This episode, you've probably already seen. It is going to be a unique episode, an interesting, a fun, and exciting episode. It's the second episode of its kind.
Yeah, so we've got a special guest joining us today, but not just any guest that we invited off the street because we feel like maybe they have something interesting to say about video games at whole. No, even more importantly, we have a guest from within our own community, and we really do have some of the best people around here. If you don't believe me, hop in Discord, check it out. It's really, really top caliber people, mostly. And one of the things we've done as a show, kind of just for, I don't know, the experience of it for someone who wants to go above and beyond, is to offer a very exclusive tier on our Patreon page at patreon.com. And we call it the director level support of the show. And this is someone who says, hey, I believe in NGP enough that I want to have some direct influence on what goes on. And so that includes some really cool perks, but among those perks are coming on the show, being part of an episode, picking your very own game to talk about and discuss with us. And so for the second time, we've had one of our viewers decide to do that. And so Garlisle is joining us this week as a director of New Game Plus with his very own video game suggestion. And we get to talk about with him. I'm super hyped.
We all are. It's going to be incredible to have another one of our friends join us for an episode to talk about a game that is near and dear to him. So let's hop into the first chapter here of our podcast with Garlisle. And guys, I know we're a little bit nervous, but look alive and let's have a little bit of fun here as we talk about our retro game of the week, Live Alive.
Overview.
So first of all, Garlisle, we want to welcome you to our podcast for the first time. Welcome.
Ooh. Hey, everybody.
We're so glad that you're here to join us for this very special episode. First of all, before we talk about Live Alive, whatever it's called, how did you find out about New Game Plus? What brought you to our podcast in the first place? How long have you been with us? Has it been 6 months, 7 months, or longer?
Ah, God, I probably should have double checked.
Just make something up.
I mean, we're probably coming up on close to a year, I think.
Okay.
I think so, too.
About a year ago, I started kind of getting really stressed out at work and needing something to distract myself. And so I started marathoning through podcast after podcast. And somewhere along the line, I started looking for ones related to video games and found out you guys had about 175 episodes or something at the time. And I'm like, okay. This will keep me busy for a while, and it's still keeping me busy, actually.
Good. You're still going through the backlog?
I've restarted the backlog. I've been through it all once.
Nice.
And then now I've been, ever since the Mega Man Legends episode, I've been playing along with you guys.
Love it.
That's amazing.
Awesome.
Not everyone does that, you know. Some people just listen.
Yeah. Just listen to the updated ones?
Yeah. Which is fair, and you're welcome to. But your experience will be that much richer if you do take the time and play along with us.
Absolutely. And I will say that ever since Garlisle made the commitment, I don't remember which one it was on, but he said that he was going to play along and write in for every episode. This is the first game that we've played where he has not written in commentary on. So I'm kind of disappointed.
Yeah, he's letting us down somehow by being here.
But yeah, for, I don't know, it's been a dozen plus episodes now, maybe, that you've played and written commentary for?
I think Mega Man Legends was around 183 or something, so we're probably about 20 some odd.
Wow. Damn. Wow.
We're finding out is Dustin's not very good at numbers.
Oh, no. No. I have no idea about numbers or time If I estimate how many people are in a room, I'm either going to give you like 10 or 10,000. There's no in between. So, out of all of the retro games that you could have chosen, you chose this one. One that I believe Kenny nor Nolan nor myself have ever heard of before. We've played with the pronunciation a little bit already, and I think it's because there's no official English. They haven't declared what the English title is because there's never been a need really for an English title because it's not an English game. It is a Japanese only game called Live Alive or Live Alive, or can you pronounce the Japanese version?
Ah, I knew you were going to call me out on that bluff.
Yes, sir.
Araibu, araibu.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's way better than what I was going to do.
That's so
best
good.
Approximation in English is actually Live Alive. I've heard like 10 different variants of how to pronounce it. Live a life, life alive, all sorts of different things. And honestly, good enough. The only place you will even find this game mentioned in English is on like soundtrack CDs that happen to be by the composer or like in one DLC track in a Final Fantasy rhythm game, actually. And those are the only English references to it. There is no real official English pronunciation.
Yeah. Nolan, you have that Final Fantasy Theater rhythm game that I got you. There's a track or two from this game on that game, which is awesome.
I saw that this week. That's kind of crazy. I didn't know at the time, obviously. But sure. I think it also appears, one of the characters appears as a boss in, I want to say, one of those like weird chibi styled Final Fantasy spinoff games or something like that no one has played.
Yeah, yeah. There was a mobile game that got a crossover event with it. That game is now defunct.
Figures.
Well, you could have picked any game. You picked this game. Why? Like, what's your history with this game? What caused you to want to pick this game as the game that, the one game that we could play together for this special podcast?
So when I was a kid, my family was not particularly well-to-do. So I spent a lot of time emulating my way through the SNES library because I was sure not buying any new games. I just kind of stumbled around across this game around when I must have been 13, 14-ish. And it stuck with me at the time because there was something about JRPGs. Like, this is the SNES era. JRPGs were the big thing. There's tons of them. Mm-hmm. And this game, we'll dig into more why, I'm sure, but this game really refuses to be all of those games. And how distinctive it was from them and a lot of the things it went on to do ended up really, like, I don't know if it just came in at the right time in my life, but I can kind of point to this game at the point at which I started looking at games in a really different light and really connecting with the stories and characters, as opposed to just like, oh, that's a cool character design. Oh, they're doing a cool thing. Oh, that's a nifty looking boss. But actually being like, oh, I feel things about these people.
Right.
And so between that personal investment and just my fascination with this game as a really unique game and wanting more people to know about it, because having never come out in English, this game isn't really known despite when it came out and the games that were around it.
Right. So it was mentioned, it came out in 94 for the Super Famicom, and Japan only means that you are not going to know about it unless you live in Japan. Like, it's no surprise that none of us knew about it. And the reason that some have said, even maybe the director has admitted, the reason it was probably never ported is because it came out on the tail end of Final Fantasy VI, which was, of course, Final Fantasy VI, a massive...
Was it 6 or 4?
It was. This came out between Final Fantasy VI and Chrono Trigger.
Right. Oh, wow. So that's the sandwich?
That's the sandwich. And so they're like, you know what? It's just not going to happen, guys. Sorry, we have bigger fish to fry, aka my boss is making me port, you know, FF6 or make it go across seas. So, and not only that, speaking of Chrono Trigger, Takashi 69, the director, I mean, Takashi Tokita, is the director.
Say Takashi 69?
I did, and no one laughed.
Everyone at home laughed.
Okay,
like,
thank
most
you, everyone.
Offensive comparison.
Kenny doesn't know who that is, but it's okay. So, Takashi Tokita was also the director for Chrono Trigger and Parasite, whatever, Evil,
Eve,
and some other, and a Final Fantasy game. So, like, very important person behind the direction of the game. Another unique thing about it, it has 7 different artists, manga artists, that have their own distinct style. And the reason for that is because the player can choose between 7 different characters and therefore 7 different storylines. So that's very unique, I think, and getting back to what you were saying, Garlisle, at the time, RPGs had a formula, and Square was one of the ones responsible for making that formula the standard or popular, and this one just doesn't do that. It takes a completely different path.
Yeah, that's a big part of it, is the setup of this game. You boot it up, you get an intro sequence, it shows you the title screen, you press start, and the first thing it asks you to do is pick between 7 different characters. In roughly historically chronological order, a caveman, a ninja, an old kung fu master, a cowboy, a modern day wrestler, a near future punk, which is titled the Mecha Chapter, and a science fiction chapter where you're playing a robot.
Which, so I love that. Yeah, first of all,
7 completely unique stories in unique times, all with unique gameplay, and each story varies in length, but I think it's I think the majority of them are somewhere around an hour to an hour and a half. Some are a little bit longer, some are a little bit shorter. But they're these distinct, somewhat disconnected seven chapters, seven character stories that in playing you start to see a few similarities or connections, and then at the end it brings it all together.
That's that premise to me is so weird because, well, for an RPG, like, this is an anthology game when you look at it, which is very strange, especially for Square. Like, what's an anthology game? There aren't many. But it's like there are seven different games, essentially, that you can play in this. And then the fact that they're very story-driven and have RPG elements, I'm just kind of shocked that it's on the SNES. Maybe that's what I'm getting at. It's like, that seems early for something so robust.
Yeah. What I like is they really leaned into this style. It would have been easy for them to make one game seven different times with a couple of different characters, but they were so good about finding unique and sometimes heavy-handed, but like on purpose, sort of cultures and times and kind of character motifs, and then like crafting a world around them. There's some similarity, like the battle mechanics stay relatively the same in terms of how it works, but the presentation and what you're trying to accomplish and the text and the characters are all totally different. And to me, it gives the game a really like literary feel, which is strange to talk about a game that way, but it does. It's just sort of these like this series of short stories and then one big overarching story that you find out that connects them all in the end. And it's super neat.
Well, and I agree, Nolan, it is strange that maybe so early, but it's not strange that this would happen and that it drew Garlisle's attention early on, because it is Square, and Square's going to do great things, like regardless of what they do. And then with that director, with some of these artists and designers, the writers behind it, even the composer, we'll get all of these elements, but when you know all of that lineup and the year that it was made and the games that it was sandwiched in between, like, some of this makes sense. At least the quality and the uniqueness and the feel and flair, all of those things, when you line up all of these other details, it just makes sense.
Yeah, young me is super bummed that they decided not to release it here.
Well, on that note, the reason we're even able to talk about this game, in 2001, there was a translation patch, a fan-made translation patch that was riddled with mistakes, apparently. Then in 2008, it was revamped, and now it's actually really quality and correct and has some extra features on there. So that's why we can even talk about this game in our gameplay section.
Yeah, the translators... this was one of their first projects at the time, so the original translation patch was functional and you could play through the game with it, but it was far from pretty. Seven years later, they decided, hey, we've learned a ton from translating other games, and went back and even did things like adding different fonts for every single chapter to help really amp up, like, hey, we want to make this look and feel distinct.
Gameplay.
Prehistoric ninja kung fu Western mecha, no, wrestler mecha space, something like that. Those are the seven unique characters, seven unique storylines. Which one did you guys begin with? I'll go ahead and just throw mine out there, since I did the first play this week, which, by the way, probably best thumbnail artwork that I've ever seen.
Oh my.
Hookshot.
It
did you guys
so
see
good.
That?
Yeah, Hookshot crushed it.
He's the best.
He used the graphic of Live Alive, which has the seven characters on it, but he replaced one of the characters with my picture, which is funny enough. But before even knowing what my first play was, I believe that he replaced the cowboy graphic with my graphic, which is the character that I chose in the first play.
That's so great.
So good. Amazing. Great job, Hookshot. But so in my first play, you can see that I first went with the Western story. The Sunset Kid was my first character.
Very nice. I love that, and I was tempted to pick it, but since you did, I went with Akira, the near future one, the mecha one. Yeah.
All right, Kenny?
I also started a little bit with the Western and then realized that that's who you had played first on your first play. And so I said, I want to start somewhere else and I'll come back to this. And so I went chronologically at that point and went back to do this Stone Age.
And then, Garlald, can you recall the first time you played it? Who did you start with?
Oh, the first time I played it. Oh, God. probably the Mecha chapter as well, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Mecha. And then this week in preparing for talking with us, who did you play first?
By request, I ended up playing the Monk's chapter first, the Kung Fu one. Nice. But I did go through all seven chapters and then began the post game as well. So.
Oh my goodness.
And did you do all of that on stream?
Yes.
Amazing.
So cool. I went back and watched some of it. It was a busy week, so I wasn't able to catch a lot of it live, but watched a lot of the VODs after the fact. We've linked a lot of those in our Discord. I'll try to include a link in our show notes today, but it's very cool watching someone that knows the game and is very familiar with the game to go through and play these different. It is spoiler heavy, though, so if you're going in, you need to know that in advance.
Yeah, I tried to avoid spoiling much on my stream, specifically when it starts mattering.
Sure. I doubt that the three of us, Kenny Nolan or myself, got through all seven stories because, again, no. If they last somewhere between an hour and two, you've got at least seven, if not 15 hours in here or so. So if each of us kind of just point out or talk maybe even just about a little bit about a chapter or a character, I think without getting into some of the maybe more spoiler territory, I think that that could be something interesting to talk about some of the gameplay similarities and differences between the chapters.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea because like there's so much to talk about in each one and I don't know about the cowboy one very much because I didn't. Right. So
I can tell you a little bit about the cowboy one. It was super cool. It's funny because it's the idea that I imagine Japan fans have of America in general, most specifically like Texas and the Wild West. But like that's what you get. So it's just Sunset Kid comes into town and there is a warrant out for his arrest or for his capture or kill or murder. He comes into town. There's a gang that's coming into town to try to take out the town. And your character, Sunset Kid, has to go around, meet with different people around the town and gather a certain amount of items. And then you set a certain amount of traps in the game to limit the amount of the gang that you're going to have to fight at the end of the story. And so this one is very narrative driven. In fact, I believe you only have 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 battles mm-hmm. in the entire game, in the entire chapter, because and they're all scripted, they're all story based, they're all very simplistic until the final battle. But it's dialogue driven. It's that whole Western vibe. It's all about telling a story in that quote unquote game of a chapter.
Isn't it Sundown Kid?
It changed with the translation patch. The original translation,
right, I guess it,
yeah. The original it's translation Japanese, patch so only had room for 6 characters, so they had to change the name.
Makes sense.
Interesting. I like Sunset Kid better, but is Sundown Kid more correct?
It's a little bit more accurate, but Sunset does seem to have stuck with the community.
Good. I like that.
They're based on like actual. So the Sundance Kid and
Billy the Kid and. Yeah. Right.
Well, and Mad Dog is his rival there that you have mm-hmm. a big story with. And so a lot of the stuff is very comparable. Even in the dialogue, when you're talking with the town, they're shouting out to other Western movies as well. So it's very cute.
Was it better than Red Dead 1?
It's the prequel to Red Dead.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Unreleased. Okay.
Kenny, tell us a little bit. Do you want to talk about Caveman? I played that one too.
Sure. I feel like the most accurate way to talk about the caveman section would be to like wave my arms and
not
make
use words
and like just emote to our audience and maybe grunt a little bit.
Cause there's no language in the game,
but I can't do that. And so they take a really funny approach to this prehistoric era and it's no text at all. So you've got characters who are interacting with each other and literally you're getting like emoticons and symbols and hand waving and actions. And considering that, they actually do a really good job of telling a story of a caveman who falls in love and then whose new love is in some serious trouble. And so they've got to go through this whole series of adventures and prehistoric creatures that have to be fought and prehistoric items that have to be like combined into better items for a really kind of cool shopping experience. And you end up, you know, being the hero and saving the day, saving the girl, and then having some even bigger stuff go on, which is kind of fun.
I believe, Garlisle, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that this is the only chapter that has somewhat random encounters.
Of the initial seven, yes. And it kind of hides the encounters by making them invisible. There's still NPCs roaming around.
Yes.
But you can find them by using the sniff mechanic.
Which is just ridiculous. You can press Y, I believe, and your characters will sniff in the air. And then there will be these little, like, smell clouds, scent clouds, wafting around the world. And you walk over to them, click on them, and it tells you if it's an animal, if it's an item or something like that. And if it's an animal, then nearby you're going to get into a quote-unquote random encounter.
So good.
But it's the only chapter that has that kind of, like I said, somewhat, I believe, random encounters. Again, like Garlisle said, they're just invisible. But if you're not using the sniff function, it functions like a random encounter would in other JRPGs of the time.
Yeah. So my story is called Blood Flow, first of all, which is really cool. And I chose this one for a reason. I didn't know anything about this chapter, but a friend of mine at work is into anime, like kind of not like heavy anime where it's like, what is this? It's called Akira. And apparently this story takes some influence from that manga / anime. And the main character's name is Akira. It's a cyberpunk aesthetic, so it's kind of it's not sci-fi, but it's not modern. It's a little in the future. And you're an orphan that grew up in an orphanage, and you learn about this biker gang called the Crusaders that are kidnapping people, basically, and terrorizing the town. And they end up kidnapping one of the orphans. And so Akira and his friend go out to rescue the kid. And what's cool about this one is that it places you in a town that feels like there's not a ton about the area in the plot itself, but being able to navigate the town and take out bikers just kind of added to the immersion. And I really liked this one because the character was cool. And yeah, I didn't pick the other ones because Dustin had the cowboy, and then the other ones were kind of meh to me. I almost picked the sci-fi one, but this one was awesome.
And then, Garlisle, you, of course, played all of them and more. Do you just want to kind of shout out one of your favorites or one that we haven't talked about that you think is worth mentioning?
There are a couple very distinct ones I'll mention. The science fiction chapter actually plays less like an RPG and almost a little bit more like a survival horror. There's only one required encounter in the entire chapter, and it's the boss at the very end, because you are trapped on a spaceship with a crew of about six people who, as far as you can tell, one of them may actually be sabotaging the ship and trying to kill the others.
That's Alien, so isn't it? Or like some of those movies?
Yeah, every single one of these seven scenarios is actually based on like a different genre of film in some sense. Yeah. And so, oftentimes references them. But yeah, there's that sci-fi one. And then the wrestler chapter actually is best described as Street Fighter meets Mega Man. Literally, there's no world map to run around on. There's no encounters to get into. You have a boss select for six different opponents. And the way that you grow stronger in the chapter is to fight these opponents and get hit with their techniques, because your character's actually like smart enough and skilled enough to learn the techniques from seeing them used.
Which is so cool. I also got to play through that one. It's probably the shortest chapter.
Yes.
And there's really no story outside of this kid wants to be the strongest. And so he's going into this tournament, and just like Garlisle said, he's fighting these different opponents, and you can get by with not getting all of the abilities, but it tells you before you fight the person, it gives a description, and then it says what their abilities are that you can learn, and then you can use those abilities in future battles. And so you've got battles against like a sumo wrestler, you've got battles against this completely Hulk Hogan like that's exactly not even ripoff, like he's got a blonde beard mustache thing, and he's got this American flag like thong on, it's not a thong, but whatever those
I just
like,
got a real different image.
Well, this game goes with some of that humor sometimes.
It actually really does. Quite
the caveman, all that that little pogo boy wanted was to enjoy some time with that other girl. Yeah. So, and his monkey friend, like there's humor all throughout, all the way from just like silly bathroom humor to like adult humor.
That
to,
reoccurring so, joke of that like father and son. What was up with that?
Oh, Garlisle, you'll have to speak to that in just a moment. Let me throw out one other thing. Sure. But the because some aren't even humorous at all. Some are just completely dramatic and serious, and to where like someone's not even able to talk because they're choking on their own blood. So like that, each of these chapters yeah. have their own thing. But I think I know what you're talking about, Nolan. Garlisle, you'll know more. Isn't there something in each story that if you get it to proc that connects the stories also?
It isn't quite a connection so much as it's just a like a running gag. Is that okay. You'll find two characters in some fashion referred to as the Watanabe family, and the dad will die and the kid will run off screaming. And this is in every single scenario, sometimes more hidden or obscured than others.
And it's just pointless. Like, yep. It adds nothing.
After you beat all seven of the chapters, you get an eighth chapter. And it's a whole nother story, right? Like, that's actually... where it's a medieval JRPG at that time.
Yeah, it's more traditional, like Final Fantasy is the vibe I got from it when it looked amazing.
Yeah, that's about right. The eighth chapter really is best described as its genre is JRPG. But having said that, I won't actually talk any further about what happens in it. If most of the stories up to that point are actually like somewhat predictable and very genre-based, all I'll say about the story of the eighth chapter is it's actually my favorite story in any RPG on the SNES.
Dang.
Wow. That's a so really high bar.
Wait. It's worth getting to then is what you're saying.
Of all time. Wow.
Like, yeah, actually that is, I know that's a really big statement to make, and it's still like the eighth chapter is still only like a 2 to 3 hour thing. And then there's another final chapter afterwards, but genuinely.
Gosh.
Love that. Love that. One of the things that is somewhat similar in each story is that at least once you are in a battle.
Yeah.
And these battles are unique. I think it's important for us to talk about because it's in a 7x7 grid. I was expecting probably a turn-based battle as this is kind of JRPG or just kind of open world. We've gotten some of that with Square. But this is a 7x7 grid, which you can freely move on and then use certain abilities. There's no MP, no magic points. It's just skills that take various amounts of time in order to cast.
Yeah, and that is similar across chapters, but very different, again, from other JRPGs at the time. And I can see it being like kind of jarring. Like it's actually punishing at times. Like Dustin, you in your first play died in seconds to the first like battle, the first scripted battle, and had to start over. I thought it was going to be like a scripted death. You know how sometimes they do that?
Oh, you're right.
But right. Yeah, I had the same experience because this grid system is at first not too intuitive. So some of the moves that you have will take time to, I guess, build up power. And in that time, you're kind of stuck and taking damage. But also, like, I don't know. It's just not clear what's going on at first. I had to read a little description of what to do.
There's no explanation. So you're kind of just going in it and guessing what it's like. But I found it to eventually and actually be somewhat simplistic.
Yeah, it's kind of... they don't really do a great job of teaching it because with the fact that you can go into any of the seven chapters, there isn't really a good time to teach it. But ultimately, a lot of the time, it comes down to finding a couple different moves in your character's repertoire, which are actually going to be useful for any given fight. It might be because they debuff an enemy. It might be because they just happen to hit in an area that is really good for your opponents. Or sometimes it just comes down to spamming moves that'll knock back or turn your opponent around, because the enemy will then, instead of counterattacking you, they've been knocked out of range and they'll have to move back in, and that'll give you another chance to attack. So there's almost a puzzle-ish element to the battles a lot of the times, is how it feels.
Well, and also, like, every battle, because there are so few, every battle felt important, and each character, like, the enemies had their unique sprites. It almost felt like everything was a boss, except for a couple sections, like in mine, where you're having to sneak past some guards. But, like, I didn't feel like there's no grinding. Like, it's just not there. It's not part of the story. It's more so like just storytelling in battle form. It's not like, oh, I need to grind and level up.
You in the caveman one, you can, though, and there's actually some good times to do that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found, Garlisle, I'd love to know your opinion on this. One of the things was that in the battle system, I felt that it was somewhat unbalanced, that was the area that was maybe somewhat left unfinished, or maybe they didn't spend as much time on that as they did on the telling the story and the art and the music and all of those things. One example, and I could give more, but this is probably the most starking one. Starking? No, most stark. Golly. Starking is I got an ability in the caveman chapter with the young girl that was with us that allowed me to one-shot the final boss. And I wasn't even like super overpowered. Literally, the majority of my moves were doing 108 points of damage, which was really good at that time. I had leveled up some, but this girl had one ability, I think maybe Wakey Wakey or something like that, that did 999 damage, one shotting the final boss that I was supposed to be terrified of.
And you did in fact grind for that then.
I mean, not hard. She got to level 7 and got this ability, and I tried it all out for the first time on the boss, and boom goes the dynamite.
Yeah. Definitely certain moves in the game are like, they try to avoid it where possible and have it be like, oh, this new move has a different AoE and stuff. But certain level thresholds, you do get moves that are just like, oh, yeah, this is what I will probably be using for damage most of the time. And some cases are more extreme than others, for sure. But they like to at least put that behind, like, hey, you have to get some effort into leveling up to get those. Like, that specific move in the caveman chapter, Belle is not in your party for particularly long during any points you can actually level. So I know when I was playing through it, I didn't actually get that move.
A lot of the battle system is a puzzle system, or is like placement. Where are you going to place your character? But I did find in every chapter with regular battles, I found myself really reverting to one or two abilities that were just kind of strong. Same. Or overpowered because it turned the enemy away, or it denied them their turn or something like that the majority of the time. And so I'm not against that. I just think that in that I was finding the battle system a little bit lacking, like again, very simplistic, and maybe I'm just not getting it. Maybe there's just so much depth there, but I found a lot of it, like, you just got to find the right placement and then spam one or two attacks. And for the most part, you're going to be able to get through 99% of the game.
Yeah, it's valid. Like I said, there is a puzzle element to it of figuring out, like, where do I need to be relative to this enemy to be safe? What attacks am I going to use it? But once you figure it out, it does tend to come down to, like, okay, these are the one or two attacks I need to be using against this enemy.
Yeah.
Aged.
So we talked about how there's 7 distinct stories. And Dustin, early on you mentioned, but I think it's worth bringing up again, there's also 7 distinct art styles and worlds that are each completely different. So tell me what you guys thought about how this game looked and that diversity, and whether having different artists collaborate is actually a wise move, or what do you think?
The last thing you just said was what stood out to me most, and I didn't read too deeply into this, but I noticed it in my first play. At the very beginning of each of these stories, I believe, they've got a little cinematic that plays, and in that, and it's cinematic, I mean it's made in JRPG Maker, but it's it's a cinematic that plays, but it's got a text that says like illustrations by in each of these chapters. Yeah. And they're different. I think I gathered, are each of these chapters illustrated by a different person?
Yes.
Yeah, the character and enemy designs were all done by a different manga artist that was popular at the time. Yep. Now, mind you, this was 25 years ago when the West barely knew what Sailor Moon is. So almost none of these artists have done works that you've probably heard of. The only exception might be the ninja chapter was done by the artist of Detective Conan.
Detective Conan.
See, even that, I don't see connects with a lot of...
Like Conan the Barbarian?
No. Nope.
Yes, that, but he that put some mental images in my head.
he went to the justice detective path for a little bit. But I think that that is absolutely brilliant, having different artists, because it still all complements each other and works well together. But you do notice that there are some distinct differences between the art styles of each chapter that really go with the theme and look different enough. I thought that's ingenious.
Well, I think that is the... most impressive thing about the game, and why I think it ages so beautifully, because it's a collection. Like I said earlier, it's an anthology of different little, I mean, it's all one game, but different stories and there, and also art styles. And I guess they didn't have seven different composers, but they each have a distinct feel. And so when you have all of that in one thing, it's like, it's not just one game and one dev team. It feels more like a, hey, let's get all these massive, well-respected artists and let them have fun with this game. And so every time you choose a different chapter, it feels like a brand new experience. Like that's, not many games can do that and say that they did that. But this game has so much variety. If you'll find a genre you're interested in and you'll be able to play it and love it.
Yeah. Rolling back a little bit, Dustin, you did mention kind of as a joke that parts of it do look like they're made in RPG Maker. The battle graphics are really where the illustration like differences shine. But the overworld graphics, while still very distinctive and varied for each chapter, also like it's a common remark that it doesn't look like it came up between FF6 and Chrono Trigger. It looks more like it's somewhere between like Final Fantasy 4 and 5.
Yeah. And I definitely agree on that. I still think that it is like I joked about it in the first play and in the podcast just recently in the episode, the RPG Maker. I don't think that necessarily means that it's bad. I think good things can be made in that system and in others like it. I've seen and played other things like it, and it can have its own unique charm. But yeah, some of the story graphics that you're seeing just going along and playing the game outside of battle, they're somewhat simplistic and somewhat it's very, very hard for me to adequately describe it just verbally without you looking at it. But in playing it, some of the settings, although very pretty, are I don't know if it's simplistic is the right word or if it's just, I just keep going to RPG Maker. I don't know. Are somewhat, yeah, they fill between 4 and 5 rather than 6 and 7, Final Fantasy 6 and 7 or Final Fantasy 6 and Chrono Trigger.
Yeah,
it's a very different style than 6 and Chrono Trigger.
I mean, obviously this game has so much in it that they had to, you know, put the labor elsewhere to include everything they wanted to include in the time frame. So I guess some of the overworld graphics might have suffered because they just kind of repeated assets or something. Like the trees in particular look very NES actually to me. and so that's, but I forgive them because of the story.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for like a lot of RPGs around this time, you could argue only had like a couple hours of story. They just stretched it out across 30 hours of dungeon. So
yes,
when you shrink those back down to being like, here's just the 2 hour chunk of this story that we need to tell and the gameplay we need to get it across, like it really makes those like focused, concentrated, good parts of the experience.
One of the things that is not like questionable is the quality of the soundtrack, in my opinion. It was composed by Yoko Shimomura.
You
nail it every time.
I know. I'm really good at these pronunciations. pronunciations. She worked on Kingdom Hearts, Final Fantasy XV, mm-hmm. Super Mario RPG, and many others. Super qualified and quality. And I sent it to Nolan a couple times this week. There's a part in the Western chapter where a little Western theme comes on at an unexpected part in the story. Yeah. And from like just that alone almost gives me chills to watch that and experience it, and kind of did in the game. I think I even saw that in the first place. So I keep referring back to that. The music in each of these chapters are absolutely amazing. I think there's very little that is reused in other chapters. So they each have their own battle themes, each have their own things going on, and it sounds very, very, very good.
Yeah, I think there's like two event themes that are reused. The boss theme that plays for the major battle of every chapter is reused and is actually somewhat famous for some of the things that it has inspired. For those listening at home who might be familiar with Undertale, Toby Fox's Megalovania was actually inspired by the boss theme of this game.
Because it's called Megalomania.
When you think Yoko Shimomura, you usually think of what she has done for like Kingdom Hearts and a very distinct sound there, but she really went all out in like nailing exactly how you expect all of these chapters to sound in music and atmosphere and sound font that are used. This was her first job with Square, actually, and it's really easy to see why they kept her around.
Two more things here that go hand in hand. I think that one, this game offers uncanny replayability. Yeah. Just because Garlel, do you have to successfully complete each of the seven chapters to get to the eighth?
Yes, because there are a couple of chapters which have bad ends to them.
Right.
Yeah, there's a couple chapters that you can get basically a fail state on. I think Dustin managed it actually by losing the first fight of the Western chapter.
Yep. All right, shut up.
And in the Ninja chapter, you can run away from the mission that you're given and just leave. And the game's and the game just tells you like bad end, like
right. And are you not allowed to maintain that bad end and continue on with the story? Do you have to go back and correct that?
I believe you do have to finish each of the chapters. Yes.
Okay. But even so, you can play the game in a different order, and then even at the end game, you can do that very differently a second time through. There's different. A few different ways to play this, and I believe even in the Western chapter, there's a few different ways that you can conclude that story in a successful good end, not bad end. But like, you can refuse to kill a guy and run away, or you can kill him the first. Or there's just different choices that you can make along the different stories, even which chapter you play in what order and how you do the end game. There's a lot of replayability there, and with that, because of the faithful community that this game has and the translations and things like that, it's a relatively easy game to pick up. Again, you're going to have to emulate this game because there is no American release, but if you're able to do that, then it's fairly easy to find a really good translated patch of this game.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status, which is our general thumbs up or thumbs down. Does require 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other, which in this case, it would have to be 3/4 of us, which is just insane. Garlel, you are our esteemed and honored guest. So how about you take it first and tell everybody why this game deserves to be played?
I've been puzzling over how I was going to phrase this all week. This is a JRPG on the SNES. And if you were to ask me to recommend you a JRPG on the SNES, this is maybe not the first, maybe not even the 10th JRPG I would actually recommend you, partially because this game stands among some of the giants of the genre. but also because I think this is a game that you will appreciate more and more the more familiar you already are with RPGs, what they were at the time, how they worked. This game, in many ways, this is kind of like a couple of Square's developers holding up middle fingers to the entire rest of the genre and saying, like, why are we still doing the same thing over and over again? Look at all this. Look at all this potential we still have to explore in the genre. And like in the years that followed, some of that potential has been explored. There's an entire RPG series these days that is Western themed. You can get all sorts of stories set in the future. You can get all that kind of stuff. But this game in many ways was ahead of its time and distinctive and really just refused convention. It refused to be what came before. And being honest, it's refused to be what came after as well. There are a few games I can point to and be like, yeah, this is kind of shades of the structure, or like, yeah, this game has like bits and pieces of this chapter in similarity. But you won't find another game that does what Live Alive did. It doesn't exist. There is no Live Alive 2, not even in the spiritual sense. So absolutely, this gets New Game Plus, not just for being an amazing game, but for being a game you will not play as another game. You won't get this experience elsewhere.
What a good pitch.
Wrap it up. Well, yeah, like you can skip.
Well said. I mean, honestly, I think let's just give our quick summary thoughts with that. Kenny, you can go first and say why you hate it because you're a weird person.
Yeah, no, this episode's been long, so we'll keep it brief. This is a great game. The unique storytelling is super welcome. How the mechanics and the sound and everything change with each of those stories just shows a lot of love and care. It's also fun. The humor's great. And the gameplay itself is pretty enjoyable, though imperfect in places. I do think they went a little heavy-handed on leaning into each of these themes almost too far. Instead of shout-outs to some of the genres, a few times it almost feels like parody. But it's just because they really want each story to be unique. Overall, well-loved game that I'm super glad we were given the opportunity to play. Certainly a New Game Plus for me.
I used to think Seiken Densetsu 3 was the biggest crime that we did not get in America.
This is taking the place?
This is taking the place.
Oh, what?
I absolutely love this idea, and I wish it would have been explored more. Garlisle summed up exactly what I have to say about it. It's because I'm giving it New Game Plus because of what it's not. It's not the other RPGs, and it's not afraid to not be those RPGs, and it's just telling stories, and the fact that they're connected, and I know how they connect and what happens, and it's amazing. And I think everyone should play it. You will not play another game like it.
I get it.
I don't know if for me it takes Seiken Densetsu 3's place.
Me either.
But
I don't care what y'all think.
I think that Live Alive is unpolished, but in some regards, I've talked about a battle system mainly. But I do think it is wholly unique. What Garlisle said about not being able to play this in any other kind of game is right on. And I think that if you don't find fun in one chapter, okay, get over it. Finish your next 30 minutes and move on to the next chapter. You're going to find some fun and connection in at least some of these chapters. There are so many different characters, so many different settings that they are different enough. And then to bring them together, you guys know, Garlisle, you know by now, I am all about story, and this game does it more than most. In fact, there are some chapters where you're not even really fighting, you're just being a part of a story. Yeah. And I'm totally okay with that. This game absolutely gets my vote, which means from all of us, Live Alive, Live Alive, or whatever else you want to call it, is most certainly New Game Plus certified.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Well, of course, you brought to us a hidden gem, which I'm so glad that you did. A few of our listeners actually played along. 16-bit Dad wrote in and said, I played through the caveman section this week, and it was hilarious. The interactions with NPCs were amazing, with the funny squeaking noises making me smile and chuckle a lot. And then when I got into a battle, I did not expect a battle system with movement at all. So I was pleasantly surprised there. As I ran out of time this week, I watched some more on YouTube, specifically the wrestling one. Imagine my surprise to see Hulk Hogan, I mean Max Morgan, in the game. This is definitely one game I have to play more of, especially since there are so many different paths.
I think, and I can't, this is hypocritical for me to say, I only played through one and a quarter chapter. I think if you want to have the true experience, you need to play them all.
Yeah, it definitely you want to eventually play them all, but one of the kind of advantages of it being in like 1 to 3 hour bite-sized chunks is even if you've got a busy life, you can just do the chunk by chunk and feel like you're completing something instead of the insurmountable barrier that is looking at a 60-hour RPG and going like, yes, do I really want to start that?
Yeah, and you do your 60-hour RPGs, you come back, you know, you had to not play for 2 weeks, you come back and you're like, oh no, where am I again, right? But in this one, it's like, well, starting a new chapter, so it makes it very easy to do. Thank you, 16-bit Dad. Cecil wrote in and said, even more than charm, character, and style, this game is loaded with ambition. How else can you describe a JRPG that also fits a stealth game, a puzzle game, a fighting game, and a survival horror and have it all work within the system? Some chapters are a bit too wacky for their own good, and the core system would do with a lot more explanation. But for a grid and turn-based RPG, it plays really well. The stories are simple but delightful, including the hidden chapters that play like an old-school Square RPG until it doesn't. I hope Garlyle talked your ear off about why this game is so great, because it really deserves it.
If someone in Discord does not like this game, they're quiet about it.
I think I did see a couple people say that they didn't quite mesh well with certain chapters, but then often they'd go test out a different chapter and be like, oh, okay, never mind, I love this.
The beauty of it.
right. Brojim wrote in lastly, and he said, when Garlyle chose an obscure game that never localized, I was skeptical. I mean, let's be real, this guy has Final Fantasy V memorized.
Wow.
However, when I dropped into the Western chapter of this game, the music and tone had me hooked. I should hate this game. The combat is confusing and frustrating in certain chapters, with abilities that seem to do nothing but mediocre damage. It's hard to figure out what you're supposed to do or where to go, but the thing is, I kept wanting to play. The graphics, the storylines, the silliness, the amazing music. I want to win this game badly. I plan to read a bit about combat to alleviate some frustration and finish the game. New Game Plus for me, easy. Congrats, Garlyle, on your episode and a great pick.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, there's some frustration that I can understand. Some chapters are a little bit more leaning into that, hey, I don't know what I'm doing at the moment, than others. The mecha chapter in particular, I think.
Well, even on the Western, without a guide, I saw someone this week didn't even know how to set up the traps. So they had gotten all the traps, and because they didn't talk to one guy at the right time, in the right way, and say the right thing, they weren't able to set the traps. So, like, you miss a huge chunk of that chapter. In the caveman section, there's one point where you have to talk to, I don't remember if it was your gorilla over and over again, but like 4 or 5 times, and it responds in the same way, and then finally it moves forward. But without knowing to do that, you're going to be stuck for a while. So there are, I did feel like without a guide and without just an infinite amount of time to troubleshoot, you are going to get stuck at times or die at times just because the lack of explanation that was there.
Yeah. No, that is a valid complaint about the game. It is one of the rougher edges.
However, I agree with Bro Jim. We all do. Congrats on your episode and on a great pick. This was a lot of fun to be introduced to this week. So thank you for introducing us to Live Alive.
Yeah, and I hope that people who are listening in pick up the game as well if they've become curious about it, because I think this enthusiasm for the game is infectious.
Yeah, absolutely. We are, however, going to set Live Alive to the side, unfortunately, and we are going to randomly select the next game that we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. We've asked it before, but Garlisle, I know you add regularly and you have added before, but is there a game that hasn't been added to our Retro Master list yet, or a game that you think you would love to see it be pulled, even now, on the randomizer?
So the other big game I was considering bringing forth to this show, for personal reasons and also just because I think it's a really damn good game, was Mega Man Battle Network 2.
Okay.
Going into the second one?
Yes.
We talked about this on my stream. Do we just want to record
episode 207 right now? Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, hey, if you guys want to, I will not stop you.
Give me a couple hours. I'm going to go play.
We'll add that to the list if it's not already. And for now, though, we're going to start the randomizer and find out what game we're going to be playing for the next 7 days. We're going to be playing a spin-off title from a main series.
Oh, no.
This could be.
Yeah, that scares me a little.
It was released in 1992 for the Game Gear.
Oh, dear.
No.
When have we played a Game Gear game?
I think we've done one.
You guys did Oasis, I think it was called, or something?
Yeah, you're right. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that game.
Look at him, remember?
Dude, yeah. Okay.
It was developed by Sega and Sonic Team.
Okay.
It's you're speaking all of Nolan's languages right
now. It's an RPG, and it is called Phantasy Star Gaiden.
Hey, we've played a Phantasy Star.
Have we really?
Yes. Yeah.
The first one?
No, three. And
three.
Only Kenny liked it, but it was also the one that was considered the worst in the series. So
it wasn't great.
Was it the one that was, remind me, it wasn't the one that, like, you don't have a weapon and you have, like, a water gun or something, right? That was
no. Fantasy you were pissed off about the poison in that episode.
Oh, where you can only get rid of it, maybe?
Yeah. Wait, so the spinoff might be better than the one we've played.
Garlisle, what do you know about Phantasy Star Gaiden? Anything?
I didn't know there was a Game Gear title for that series, actually. Uh-oh. So this will be...
Let me get out the Game Gear.
Yeah.
All right, so find a copy of Phantasy Star Gaiden this week and play it along with us on your Game Gear.
Also, join us in Discord this week. You can join the community that we have been talking about several times throughout this episode. We want you to hang out there with us. So ngppodcast.com, click join us in Discord.
Of course, we want to formally thank Garlisle one more time for his wonderful willingness to support the show and to take time out of his schedule and come talk about an amazing game with us. Thanks so much. We also want to give a big shout out to all of our producer level supporters, Antonin, Ben, Bill, Dear Baby, Corey, Maxima, Zach, and Zion. You guys are great. And thanks to Mariano for stepping out this week and joining us on Patreon for the first time. Welcome.
Thanks.
And obviously a special thank you to Garlisle for joining us for this episode, for supporting us at that level. We are so close to playing Dungeons & Dragons with Mariano coming on and the others that have come on most recently. We're less than $50 away. And so if you want to see us, Nolan, Kenny, and Dustin, play a one-shot Dungeons & Dragons campaign, which I don't know if anyone wants to see that more than I do, then go to patreon.com/ngppodcast and you can find out more information there. Garlisle, where can our listeners watch your stuff, interact with you? Where can they find you?
For the most part, I am around on the NGP Discord. If you are interested in seeing me stream things, because I do have a fondness for streaming old and new games, twitch.tv/GarlisleWilds.
Love it. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch at NGP Podcast, YouTube at New Game Plus Podcast. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by our good friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Phantasy Star Gaiden. Until then, I'm still Dustin of the Western chapter.
Yes.
I'm Odeo.
Oh, and that's Garlisle of what?
Of
all seven.
Yeah, sure. all the Chaos Emeralds.
From it all. And this has been a very special episode of New Game Plus.
So we've talked about how this game played. Let's talk about how it aged.
That Kenny, was the worst, you know,
most but you transition. Know going in that that is absolutely unacceptable.
Just
that
you cannot.
When I'm asking, when we're talking about starting a section, it's not segue us into it. We naturally get segway by a voice that says, "Kenny, listen,
we've done 206 of these episodes.
Even
we all know
Kenny
how terrible
laughed at
we
that." He was like, "Oh my god,
he gave
I couldn't
up.
Take myself seriously. After
he
this.
Gave up."
Just talk like, about one aging factor. Like
this is no, what
I'm
Kenny
gonna,
just
I'm
said.
I'm gonna find a good way to do it, but okay. It's natural.